Yeah, good evening, good morning, wherever you are on this planet. I saw somebody logged in and it's 2 o'clock in the morning for you. Thank you very much, Faith, for introducing the session tonight and for all your support you gave me with the technology in advance and with all the emails. And thank you also for Sangha Life for inviting me here. Yeah, it's really nice to see everybody coming in the chat. Saying hello from different places on Earth, like from America, I see New Zealand, France, England, Germany. Just maybe for a moment, you just really reach out to this sangha, to everybody who is here in the space. At the moment, it's like 112 people. And I invite you to be here just as you are, like really feeling so welcome with everything what is going on for you at the moment, with whatever mind state you're in, however your body feels. Just really, maybe you can also just really welcoming yourself just as you are. So we start with half an hour meditation, and my invitation for that is that you go with what feels juicy for you. Like I will be offering different approaches or different paths you can go in the meditation. And the invitation is to really listen into your body. What feels like a wise space for you to be in? Like, where do you want to put your awareness? So rather than having to follow my words, just see where do you get a sense of a good texture, something juicy, something to, there is a space I can explore. So I invite you to all lay down. And of course, if you don't want to lay down for whatever reason, that's absolutely fine. But since we are diving in the topic of receptivity and non-doing, laying down would be a very good approach. And if you stay sitting, get really, really comfortable. Like maybe even leaning against a wall, sitting on a sofa, just if you're laying on your back and you feel like some tension in your lower back, you could put a blanket or cushions under your knees. And just asking yourself, is there anything else I need here to be kind to myself and to be comfortable? And taking time for that. Then, as you're laying down, what about sinking into the earth? Inviting a bit of melting here. Maybe the skin of the back of your head can melt down a little bit more towards the shoulder blades, towards the pelvis, towards earth. The skin on your forehead could kind of let go into your cheeks, into the back of your head. What about allowing the chest bone to drop down into the space between the shoulder blades? And allowing the space between the shoulders to become soft, the space between the collarbones where it's soft in the throat, to melt a little bit more. Allowing the upper back, the lower back, and the pelvis to become heavy. Maybe the front of your thighs could sink into the back of your thighs. The space in your knees can drop down. The calves and the feet connected to earth. Truly allowing your body to rest on the body of the earth. Just for some time. For the time of now, what about letting go of your sense of the past? Letting go of the sense of future? Just be. Without anything having to be a certain way. Just feeling the whole of your body and how the breath is traveling through your body. While feeling the whole of your body, being with the journey of the breath. In a very light way. Without having to reach out for anything. And if sinking into your body feels like, for what reason, it may be just not the right thing to do. What about listening to a sound you can hear? Listening to the space around your body. Or listening to the space around the sound. Like a deep cuddling into your body, cuddling yourself into your cells and membranes. Feeling the movement of your cells. This one organism. Feeling the movement of your skin. In the space under your skin. And if it feels supportive, it may be helpful for you for some time to put your fingers on your chest bone. With your inhalation, really slowly bring your fingers up towards your throat. With the exhalation, bringing your fingers down again to the bottom of the chest bone. Or just having your hands wherever it feels supportive for you. Maybe on your belly, on your chest. As a nourishing holding you can give yourself. As if your hands were giving you permission to be as you are. Giving your mind permission to have its thoughts. Without having them disturbing you. Resting in yourselves. Resting in the space under and in your skin. So maybe you just feel supported by dropping down in the back of your body again and again, dropping down into the contact with the earth. Allowing your body maybe to become even a bit more heavier. Just feel into the texture. Where is there a texture or maybe even a color? Something which feels like alive, juicy or yummy. Maybe it's being open to a sound. Feeling into some part of your body which really feels good or okay. Maybe resting in this part of your body, resting. Maybe in a shoulder. Or in your feet. Maybe you find juiciness or aliveness in feeling your whole body breathing. Maybe there's a path and with your exhalation kind of widening, opening your body to the space around your body and to the space around the space and to the space behind the earth. Just resting into this space. You find a space in or around you where all your body sensations your feelings can just be as they are. Where a small mind is held by big mind. Space which is whispering a yes, 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 this moment just as it is. And in all that, dropping down even a bit more, resting. Resting and opening to aliveness, to juiciness, to texture. To space. And as you slowly connect more to the outer world again, maybe inviting micro movements into your body, maybe taking one or two deep breaths Or even giving a tiny shake to your body. Yawning, sighing, making sounds. So when you come out of this form of meditation, from laying down into more of a listening, allow yourself to go really slowly, moving with your inner space through outer space. Maybe stretching yourself. And if you're exploring something for you while laying down and you feel like, or I'd rather like to lay down than to sit up and listen, just stay where you are. Stay with the aliveness or juiciness or whatever is there for you. So, hello everybody again. I will offer now about an half an hour of sharing. And the invitation for you is to listen with your whole body, like to stay really sensitive and open to the room you're in, to the space between your eyes and the room. Staying open and receptive to sounds, sensations. Okay. So I usually prepare my talks very well and spend quite some time with that. And this time it's different. Like when you teach here at Sangha Life, they ask you like to send a topic and write a blog article, and there is a deadline for that. And when the deadline was, I got COVID. So I thought, okay, I'm just going to finish that. I just write down my topic and a blog article while having fever and while vomiting in between. And then I spent a week in my tent because I wasn't at home. And after about 8 days, I looked at the topic I suggested to offer. I was really surprised because I had planned to talk about loss and dying, or maybe about sexuality and intimacy. But then I saw, oh, interesting, where's that coming from? Receptivity, non-doing. And it goes together with, we all don't know. I don't know who I am. It goes together with mystery. Like, did you have any mind states today, any thoughts which you didn't like? Just reflect for yourself. Did you have any mind states today which you did like, any thoughts you did like? So who is making that? Where is it coming from? So the practice of receptivity is going with questions. It's actually the big questions. It's unexpected suffering we can experience in life, and we will. And it's simplicity. Simplicity of things like the trees, the leaves moving with the wind. These big questions can, and the suffering and the simplicity, they can wake us up. They can shake the bureaucracy of the ego. If we stay open to that. So I have been actually traveling for a whole year with two of my three children and my husband. And we just recently got back in this house here about 2 weeks ago. And the day when we entered Germany and we were still with a bus and a tent, we all got COVID. So coming out of the disease, entering back into a structured life with a lot of things around us and a lot of things to do, I didn't find the gaps I wanted to have to prepare for tonight. And then we had the technical meeting, Faith and me, on Wednesday, and before that the Wi-Fi broke down and the telephone didn't work, and after the computer was crashed. So the little gaps I had to prepare for this talk, I was spending with technical things or went to the forest. So the preparation was going into the forest, opening up to the air and the leaves and the space there, sinking into my feet, or laying down and resting. And I realized that perfectionism, like trying to be perfect, is like continuously telling me that I'm not good enough. And I saw myself that the habit was knocking at my system of staying awake late at night until 2 or 4 in the morning to prepare this talk, to read, to get kind of spiritual knowledge. And luckily, I didn't allow the habit to enter. I laid down on my back as much as I could to feel, to be with what is. And I find that an amazing practice, which we can do like several times during the day. What if you come back in your house from work or from shopping and just lay down on your floor or on your sofa? I love the floor. And rest. And if you don't do that like once a day, but maybe like 5 times a day, or more. And what if it doesn't have this receptivity and openness and the deep rest? What if it doesn't have to be on a mat, a sofa, or a cushion? What if it can be like while walking? Like a few days ago, I walked out of a petrol station. I felt very like fast in my body, quite stress, the skin shivering, the heart beating, and so much openness and the wind on my skin and the breath moving through my whole body. So it's not about gathering knowledge, collecting knowledge. It's about learning to love. a practice of loving. Can we love what is? Can we truly love what is? With all the pain and this mess included. Can we love the sunset? Can we open to the wonder of life? Like our ancestors, they have been out there in nature every day. They have been under the sky, this immense sky every day, so close to this miracle of sky. Can we allow the divine to communicate to us through the eyes of a child, through a tasty fruit, through a sunrise? If you read my blog article, there was one poem in it, and I like to read it to you because I brought my book with poems. That was the preparation I did. I love poems. So I hope I find it. Okay. So I was passionate, filled with longing. I searched far and wide, but the day that the truthful one found me, I was at home. So being back home on this material home with a home in my heart after a year of traveling, it's very different that life than when you travel. I mean, you know that. And one thing we did on our journey was to walk from Istanbul to Konya, which was a 40 days walk and took us, there was like 800 kilometers. And we felt so rich being out there in nature. We felt so rich by just having a little backpack. Well, the backpack of my husband was huge. We felt so rich by dirt and sweat and rain and heat, not knowing where we were gonna sleep in the evening, not knowing where we get the next food from. Grateful and rich. And now being in this house again after like this year of being out there, it took me some time to feel rich in spite of all the material around me and the many things I could do during the day, all the offers around me and my letterbox and like so many opportunities here. I couldn't feel that richness. Not immediately. But the practice is for me to sink down, where does it feel juicy? And if that means like shaking the body, dancing, going out in the forest, or even like screaming or resting again and again onto a tree, if it's moving my arm or my shoulder, or just if you just move your hands, there can be juiciness in there. There are sensations. And being open and receptive to the simplicity of things. And I found that people here in Germany, or at least around me and, well, many other parts of the world, are living a very, very structured life. Like, we get up in the morning and we know how the whole day is gonna be, like every hour is scheduled. And I thought, I don't want to step back in that again. I thought, there must be respect towards space. We all must show respect towards the element of space. Keeping some time just for space, just for life to enter you, just for wonder to enter you during the day, during each day. What about making this a priority? Like, how would your life look like? Meditation wouldn't just be a practice you attain from time to time, but actually, when it would be like most of the time during the day. And often if we go to a meditation retreat, or at least in the Vipassana tradition, we hear the instruction of guarding our sense doors. And is there another way than being a guard in meditation? Is there another way than going like forward and striving and trying to get somewhere and solving our problems and scanning things? Could it be that if we allow fluidity in the diving into the horizontal, whatever that means for you, diving into a receptive listening, could it be that we land where we already are? And that we find out, wow, it's all there. So the Buddha, he practiced with several teachers and he went through quite hard, intense practice. And then he decided it's not the right way to be, like, in a way, unfriendly to my body and mind. And from what I understood, he laid down under a tree. He laid down under a tree. And he thought, there must be another way. There must be another way. And then when he sat under the tree, determined to sit until he would be fully enlightened, he could see the coming and going of all things, the interconnections of all things. By finding a middle way, whatever that means for you, like, you can ask yourself, where is my middle way? And if a middle way could mean like an appropriate way, a wise way, a good enough way to support a wholesome life. In the Kalama Sutra, the Buddha tells the monks or his disciples to not just follow texts, scripts, teachings and authorities, but to honestly, and I love that word there, honestly ask themselves, what is appropriate, what is a wise and wholesome way of practicing? And can we give ourselves permission to practice what feels good and really go with that? Really explore for yourself, could there be a way? Could there be a way to go with what feels yummy? In Zen Buddhism, there's a story where a monk asked his master, "Master, is there anything I can do to become enlightened?" And the master replies, "No more than you can do for the sun to rise up." And the disciple says, "But then what is all this spiritual practice about?" And the master replies, "So you're awake when the sunrise is happening." In Turkey, we did walk to the grave of Rumi, a Sufi poet, and the grave is in Konya. And it was quite beautiful to see, like, into this Sufi order they have there, which has to do a lot of to do with dancing and art and music. That's their way of practice there. And I wonder, how can our life be more like music? How can our life be more musical? Like, what do we need for that? Rumi said also that what you love most saves you. That what you love most saves you. Are we ready to be saved? Don't forget space. Don't forget yourself. Allow the divine to enter through whatever door is open for you. This practice we are doing here, like this meeting together in this space, it's a life, a world-changing possibility in itself. Like, I recently saw a movie. Maybe you hear about, I'm sure a lot of you heard about that. Like, it's a true story. It happened in 2016. There were 13 boys locked in a cave in Thailand. And they were like 3 to 5 kilometers, I don't remember, but it was really deep into the cave, and then rain started and the cave was flooded. And there were about 12 and 13 years old boys, 13 of them. So they were locked in there, and no one from the outside world knew if they were alive and how they were doing. And they gathered around 5,000 people from all over the world in front of this huge cave, and they tried to prevent the water from up the mountain to go into the cave, and they supported the families, and they slept there. They built this camp. And after 11 days, divers managed to find the boys. Nobody knew if they would be alive or in which state they would be in. And these boys were all fine. They were actually calm and present because they were in there with their football teacher, and the football teacher had taught them meditation in this tiny spot where they could sit surrounded by darkness and water. And it took another 7 days to get the boys out of the cave. So they were in there for 18 days. They had food and light the last days. But the only reason they could survive was this practice. Or at least we don't know if they would have survived, like if panic had broken out. It's very likely they wouldn't. We don't know what life is bringing to us. We know that dying is happening, going to happen one day for us and for all other people, all the people around us. We don't know when it's going to happen. I want to be ready for that. I want to be like living close with and from my heart and practicing so I don't go into a reaction which is unsupportive for this earth. Well, recently I was at Equitoleni, retreat center in the Pyrenees in France, and I did a laying down meditation, deep rest meditation with Jaya Ashmore, one of my beloved teachers. And at one point, just before the meditation, I went into the kitchen and I saw there was a really big pile of non-organic cheese there. And I felt a strong reaction in my body. And I love the place, I love the people. And I do eat vegan since almost 25 years. So I went into the meditation hall, which actually isn't a hall, it's just an outside wooden platform, a really basic place there. And I laid down, being like rushed with stuff like anger, judgment. And I was so present with it that within a minute it was past, it was gone. I was free. So this practice is contributing so much to peace on earth. And that's why it's offered also on donations, because we don't want to exclude anybody from a practice which brings freedom, liberation. So just to end with, I'd like to share something from the Sufi trail we walked in Turkey. I'd like to share with you about the mind-blowing generosity of the people we met. That was like, for me, the thing which kind of struck me most. Like one day we, and the kids there were like 8 and 13, laid on a park bench, slept on a park bench in the night. And I was woken up in the middle of the night by three men standing in front of me. And since we had already walked 400 kilometers and I knew, I like had the deep sense of, I know everybody wants me good here. Like I could feel it. I wasn't afraid at all opening my eyes, seeing three men next to my park bench, this park bench. And it was the major, like the head person of the village and two friends of his. And they asked us if we wanted to come to the house of the muhtar, which is like the Turkish word for head person of the village, to sleep there. If in Germany somebody wakes you up when you're sleeping outside, it's the police. It's not the head person of the village to invite you to his house. And on another day, we walked by small houses. And actually, there were no other hikers on this way. I mean, not like we bumped into one person. He walked into us coming from Egypt, but we didn't see any other hikers there. No pilgrims while we were there. So there was a woman calling us from her small house. And we went to her window and she gave us a pile like that high with filled pancakes. And it wasn't a restaurant, it wasn't a shop, nothing. She was obviously preparing the food for her family or for her neighbors, I don't know. And we walked off with this pile of filled pancakes, which might have taken like, I don't know, it would take me 2 or 3 hours to make something like this and to harvest the stuff in the garden. And I thought, wow, how much potential is in us to give? Like, I really don't see myself standing in the kitchen 2 or 3 hours and then somebody who I don't know come walking past my house and I see, hey, take all the food I just made. So with the generosity and paying dana, I find that we have the tendency to get so tense about money here in this super rich country I'm in, and to think we have not enough. But actually, when you give, in a way, it becomes more. It's really rich on different levels. It feels really nourishing. I'm so grateful for all the Turkish people we met and for their huge generosity. And me and Sangha Life would be grateful if you want to donate something, and you can do that by pressing the green Dana button below the screen. And any amount is so welcome. And of course, you're absolutely invited also to be here and feel that you are a contribution to this space through your presence. I thank you very much for listening, being there with your presence. It's shortly past 9. I do offer the space now. I open the space for questions and answers. And it actually is great if you have a question. I consider that as support. And it can be really any questions. And I like all of us, like, because sometimes the questions might feel vulnerable for somebody, that we hold the questions and all people here in the Sangha, we hold it into our hands. We hold everybody, which is everybody here in our hands, knowing that our hands are held by something bigger. So there is this ask a question box, and you can write a question there. And as far as I can see, don't know what I pressed now, there's no question in it yet. Actually, I didn't say at the beginning, but for me, like, diving into the session tonight was like dedicating the session to all teenagers on this earth who suffer from depression and to all young adults on this planet who grow up in this time. Nobody has a question. I have a question. Because when I'm talking about the wonder of life, and if we make that a practice, we can look at anything we have around. Like, I have this cup here next to me, and we can ask ourselves, what makes that possible? And if you want, you can put it in the screen. What makes this possible, this cup? What do you see here? What makes that possible? I do see clay and earth and the sky and rain. I do see the person who made this cup and her or his family and their ancestors. And I do see the trees and the wind who brings rain. And actually, I see everything in this cup. Everything is in everything. And this is another wonder we can open to, that everything is interconnected, nothing exists just on its own. And you can, like with everything you see in this cup, like the clay, you can ask yourself again, and where is it coming from? Like, what makes it possible? Everything is in everything. And if we live from the space, like how will our life be? If we live from our insides. So the first question I have here up on the screen is from Elizabeth. And the question is, how is pilgrimage, wandering, travel a support for openness and not knowing? You know, I mean, the openness is just there around you, so obvious when you are walking. Because you're just on earth and it's just the sky above and this big space around you. And actually you're not knowing where you're gonna sleep. Because not like the Sufi path is not like, oh, there are hostels, there are much accommodation. And also the slower you travel, like when we walk, the deeper the journey goes. And it's actually not as inspiring as a pilgrimage can be. It's not about the journey. It's about being receptive to awakening. And what was very amazing for me is that my kids, they could see so deeply into the interconnectedness of things, that we're all interconnected. And well, we do eat vegan in my family, but my 14-year-old daughter, now 14, she was quite attached to drinking milk and eating cheese. So she did with her father and she did with friends. But then being on this pilgrimage, she decided, and it came totally out of herself, she decided, even though we saw a lot of animals just grazing or being close to a family, she decided to only don't do with that anymore. She could see how it's harming the planet. She could see how it's harming the animals. So this openness came through that. And before actually we went on that walk, we did another pilgrimage, walking 310 kilometers to Santiago de Compostela. And I was the only fully vegan in our family, but my husband and my little son, they both decided not to do with it anymore because they could see so much suffering on our path. Actually, we saw animals suffer quite a lot. And yeah, there's an openness, and don't have to be the same for you. It's just like shifts happening when you're out there in nature, out with the unknown, out with, you don't know where you get food again. Like, one time we really didn't know for 3 days where could we stock up with food, and we walked the whole day, like 7 hours, very difficult. There's often no path, like you really have to make it path yourself. And we walked up a mountain through the forest. We didn't meet any other people. And then there were 4 people standing in front of us, greeting us, opening the door of a kind of shed. And there was a cloth on the floor full of food there for us. And we, like that, they couldn't have known we would come there. Like, I mean, nobody knew. So things like that happen. Hello, Nirmala. Do you see receptivity as something that can be trained, or is it more about finding and discover a natural space inside that is already receptive? Resting. I think the training could be to rest as much as you can. To lay on your back. To lean against a tree. I think finding and discovering a natural space inside which is already receptive. We need to listen. We need to stop. We need to jump out of our habitual doing stuff and not allowing space. We need to allow space to enter us. We are a lot busy with saving the world, but do we allow the world to save us? So yeah, I think that the training could be to lay down as often as you can. And if you fall asleep, it's fine. Something will enter. Like it's a fluidity in life. It's just like leaning into the fluidity of nature. It will come through. There's no way around. Thank you. Thank you for your questions. Well, many coming in now. Can you speak to the wonder of the divine in what is painful or ugly? Yeah. Well, I like to recite a poem from Mary Oliver. Every day I see or hear something that more or less kills me with delight, that leaves me like a needle in a haystack of light. This poem is like expressing for me the like pain of the earth, the disasters we are sometimes in, the great heat, hate and greed, hate and delusion. Like when I look at a tree, I see the delight in it. And when I look at the tree, I do see the dying in it, the impermanence, the dryness, this tree being thirsty or sick. Everything is in everything. And it's, I think it's a question where, yeah, many people have this question at the moment with the planet, like the situation on our planet. Like, how can we still feel good? But if you see the goodness in everything, and if we look at things clearly and deeply, there is some goodness to find there. Like having COVID in a tent, and actually having my whole family having COVID in a tent in a garden, like where can you feel like the delightfulness in it, the wonder in it? And yes, there is wonder. Me looking at the clock like every 5 minutes, thinking, when is this over? Like, how long does it take? And then it's gone. And then 5 hours are gone. So much pain and so much pain sometimes. And then there are spaces in our body which are not painful, maybe. Maybe our toes, maybe our fingers. So I would say address to what feels good or good enough. Good enough. And if we spend some time there, just being there with curiosity, with what's coming there. And about ugliness, I don't know exactly what you mean from this, but it's a lot how our mind sees things, and it has a lot to do with society as well. And can we make a decision for something we labeled as ugly, not to find it ugly anymore, but to see the goodness in it? So, yeah. Like, pain, ugliness, the situation on this planet, like we could say we cannot rely on life at all. It's like so impermanent, and it's a disaster, and it's painful, and it will come again and again, the pain. And at the same time, there's nothing you can rely so much on than life. If we find ourself getting like fixated on something, focusing on circumstances, can we, like, we are not in touch with reality. We are in touch with the circumstances, with the narrowness. Reality of life is wide and fluid. And what supports you to sink again, to lean again into something which is soft, white, fluid. So, yeah. Thank you. How radical in a critical, systemic way can, should meditation be? Oh, my spontaneous answer is don't let it be radical at all and really go for it. Yeah. And we are living in this paradox. We are living with this body and we are living with the circumstances around us. And it needs to be addressed. Our daily life needs to be addressed. And at the same time, just don't forget about the divine. I call it the divine. You could call it however you want. Space, vastness, a true, like the reality. It means also like it also has to do with what means radical for you. Is radical like tensing you? Is radical leaving something out? Because what we like, I think what we want to get with our meditation is to really include it in all the areas of our life. And yes, how radical do we want to get with that without having tension? Am I still open with that? Or is my openness now, tonight, maybe coming from just putting a movie on TV, cuddling with my kids, eating thumb crisps, and cuddling in a blanket? That's enough. It's not about being perfect. It's about being like living your life good enough for a wholesome way. And the core, one of the core teachings of the Buddha is the Noble Eightfold Path. And there are 8 points there. And actually what I found so interesting is that 5 of these 8 points, they don't refer to meditation. They refer to our understanding from things and our intention. Like, and this is something you could, Francis, you can ask yourself again and again, like, what is my intention here? And is it a whole, like, as is it true to me? And what I said before, when the Buddha said to the monks, like, don't just listen to text, scriptures and authorities, like, just ask yourself honestly, what is a healthy and appropriate way for you to practice? I like this word honesty in there because we can feel in our body, like where is the door open? Where's the way? What's right for me now? If we honestly diving again and again back into the listening from inside. And it might change over time how so-called radical talking in your words can be your practice. Maybe there are different faces. That's fine. Like, explore for yourself where the juiciness is. So thank you, Francis. So the next question is, I could not connect to a juicy part in my body. So my anxiety, any suggestions? Also, what is the name of the retreat? Thank you so much for tonight. Thank you, Ola. So, Jaya Ashmore, she is offering deep breaths retreats. She's based in Spain. She's offering retreats in France and Finland this year. And I think now she was just in Israel. Like, you can look her up. It's the website is, I think, opendharma.org might be the website where you can find her. There are a few other teachers there as well. I also teach deep rest meditation. That's what I love most. You couldn't connect to a juicy part in your body. And there was anxiety. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for sharing and putting this into the space. So, well, I know anxiety and not finding a safe space in the body. Especially if our nervous system is not calmed down and when it's very, very agitated, like resting, sinking into the body, it's probably not the practice I would suggest. What really helps me with anxiety, and if I feel like, well, I'm laying here, but it's just like, wow, it's really heavy and fast, is to move my body. I do have, it might be even on the Sangha Life, Da Library, but it's for sure on my YouTube channel and it's in English language. There's a half an hour guided meditation on meditating with anxiety and fear and meditation for difficult times. If you look that up, meditation on difficult times. Well, you can find my YouTube channel best via my website, actually. If you scroll down, you can click on it. And that's a meditation where we really go into shaking the body, moving the body, and allowing the wisdom of the body to talk to us. And after doing that for half an hour or for some time, we are somewhere else. Something may land, something may shift. And maybe just a tiny, tiny bit. So if I'm really, Ola, if I'm really like full on with anxiety, I need to go out in the forest. And since I love the body focused psychotherapy training I did, and I'm still involved in this teachings there, I love to move my body with the trees. And like, I remember one time, I was crawling through the leaves and making sounds of an animal and just really needed to feel the tension in my body and the power there is. And after it was different and I could go further and I could ask myself, okay, and what's now? So the juiciness can be following what is okay, what is good, what is for you a good practice. Like you don't have to lay down. And if there's no juicy space, maybe you can listen to sounds. Maybe this gives some taste to a journey. You think, oh, I want to follow that. Yeah. But really go with what is right for you. And there are times in our life when a formal meditation practice is impossible. I get a song in my head. Satnam Gaur, I think, is the name of the woman who sings, and she's singing at one point, "Never forget God, even for a moment." And that doesn't mean we have to be at all perfect or good all the time, but we don't forget. We don't forget about the goodness and everything and the wholeness and our interconnectedness. So yeah, thank you very much for your question. I hope that's helpful what I share. I love that you mentioned teenagers. Can you suggest how to negotiate lovingly with a 17-year-old daughter? Yeah. Sorry, I have to laugh. I just talked to my 17-year-old daughter yesterday, which was not so easy. When I think of letting go of her and the changes that occur, parenting is a work in progress, and I would love to hear you say something. Thank you. So when my well, almost 18-year-old, my now 17-year-old daughter moved out of our house last year. And I'm not sure if I understand your question right. Maybe I don't, but that's what's coming up. To live 1 year in Estonia, and now she's still not living with us, like she's living with her father in Switzerland. I was overwhelmed with what was going on. Like nobody had told me that this is what you can experience if your first child moves out of house. And there were all kinds of different feelings until I got a book in my hands and it actually said, my child is breaking out and I'm breaking down. That was the title of the book. And it actually helped me to see, okay, it's just a really normal phenomenon among parents. And it's a heavy duty thing there. So one thing which helps me in my relationship to my 17-year-old one, which is not an easy relationship, is to have her close with me, like to have her close to my heart. There was a time that our contact was so difficult that I carried a cushion under my t-shirt, just as if I were pregnant, and or that I was holding like a teddy bear, just to have something of her there. Just dive in the process with it, for whatever, like to going to whatever feels what is supporting you. And yeah, I do bring in the Dharma again and again to my children because I feel it's such a good base to have for them going out there in this world. And if it may not be through meditation practice, maybe it can be through dancing, through practice of awareness, or like in Germany we have this wilderness retreats, and my daughters did that and it was really really profound for them to go out in nature. Yeah, so we're almost done. Can you speak about the Western idea about being self-supporting and how confusing that can be? I don't know what you mean. I'm sorry, Sandy. Maybe you mean the self in the sense of that we identify as with a fixed self, something in us, which the Buddhist practice teaches us there's nothing like that. There is no self. But as I said before, we are living in this paradox. So we still go with what is supporting life, what is supporting the people around me, what is supporting my family, and what is supporting this body. And that can be something profound, just like making sure I drink enough during the day, making sure the food is healthy I take in, like it's doing good to me, making sure I get enough sleep, just like on a really basic level. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't get the part where you're confused with that, but yeah. How did your kids cope with so much walking? They were amazing. I don't know how they coped, but they were amazing. One day we walked 35 kilometers and we actually, on that day, we found green stones and my son, he was collecting about 5 kilos of the stones and took them in his backpack. Don't know where that energy came from. I think it's from nature. I think the energy came from nature, from the mind-blowing generosity from people there. He didn't carry the stones for all the way, actually. My husband did. So thank you so much for all your questions, for being here tonight, for supporting the Sangha, being part of it. I so much wish you like all the best, whatever that means for you. We don't always know what it is. So thank you. Bye-bye.